As we consider the subject that we're going into tomorrow, to take a look at where are we? Where are we going? What needs to be done? How do we become fruitful in a fragmented world? Donald and I, of course, are challenged with the task of just setting the context. And as Donald has just laid out for us where we are in our society, I'd like to lay out for all of us where we are in our personal lives. The stages of life. And if you turn to P9, it is. Let us consider this. God is a sovereign developer, and we are his servants, and we're servants for his purposes. God is a purposeful God. He never put you on this earth without a purpose. He had something in mind. You were born perfect for your purpose. You had everything you needed. When Jesus lay in this tiny cradle, there he was. He had everything he needed to be the Savior of the world, to perform everything God wanted him to perform. And you and I are just that way. God has never made anything without a purpose in his mind. And our whole life is an experience of God preparing you and me for his purposes. That's an exciting thing. Because you didn't get a chance to vote what family you were born into, what color eyes you had, what initial schools you went to, what ethnicity you had. You didn't vote on any of that. And so here you are. You might have come from a family that was fragmented, difficult. Or might it come from a beautifully harmonious family? God had it all planned, every bit of it. And part of it is perhaps not because of what you ultimately will do, but it's what will prepare you to do. And so God is constantly shaping you and me to perform and to become the servants he needs to do and accomplish his purposes. So there are no wasted moments. There are no wasted experiences. And it's good to take stock periodically. Where are we? And many of these things, these experiences we go through, are fairly typical, fairly common for people. And God is using people, events, and circumstances continually to shape our lives. And key to that is our response. And we can cooperate with him. We not only respond, but we can proactively get involved. And it's the wise person, the person who is sensitive to God, understands he might be working on my humility, or he might be working on a certain aspect of my life or my character. And so it's wise, and what the Bible teaches, as I've studied through all different characters, and then many, many of our own lives and great people, and looking at the span of their life, and what I noticed absolutely critical to coming to the place that they were able to do what God wanted them to do when he wanted them to do it, is response, response, response. Responding to circumstances. Just look at Joseph. If he would have chosen to reject the circumstances that he was so cruelly thrown into by his brothers, never noticed any bitterness. You never notice him saying, "Well, where are you, God? Where's the dream?" But he was faithful, plodding through, faithful. We see no evidence of his bitterness. We only see evidence of Potiphar recognizing God's with him. How did you notice? How does one notice that God is with you? How did they see it? Was it the way he worked? Was it the way he responded to circumstances? How does God see that in you and me? And that goes all the way through. And so Joseph, when he stood for God, when the Potiphar's wife said, "Come on in, Joseph," he said no. Not only no because of God would not want it, but he said, "Potiphar, your husband has given me everything, but not you." And there he was, responding again. Now's the time to hear the trumpets from heaven. "Hey, Joseph, you did it. You did it. You stood and you responded well." But he winds up in jail. Right in the bottom pit. plenty of room for bitterness. His response was not so. He responded to God. And you again see him rise. And you again see a warden, the man in charge, says, this man needs to be responsible for others. I can trust him. He had no vision of he would one day be a ruler. Hang on, Joseph, we might have said. Hang on, Joseph. Because just around the corner, my friend, you're going to soon be number two in Egypt. From his point of view, he didn't know that at all. But he responded to God. And so he allowed God to shape him and mold him. And that's what Job has said here in Job 10:8. He says, your hands have shaped me. They've made me. And so God was shaping Joseph. And unbeknownst to him, the timing came at age 30. And God put him in as ruler. Because he could trust him. He had formed him. And see, just as you sit here now, some of the greatest days you have could be coming just around the corner. Great moments. Great times for those who continue to respond to God. So let's turn the page and look at this. Because God has shaped us and he called us and he's given us the capacity. Now, we had a different machine here before, and it was a machine you just put a natural piece of paper in. But we switched machines to an overhead, and I neglected to go get my overhead. So you find the overhead. You find it right there, and you're laid out for you. Let's just look at these stages quickly. And I've given the ages, 18, 30, you know, and on forward. 18. Hey, can you remember when you're 18? Wasn't that, I mean, you were driving a little bit. You were off to college. You were something like that. I just remember that. I got a little car from my dad and mom, and, you know, I just thought life had just begun. But little did we know, huh? It was just beginning, but it was just a chapter with many, many things coming. And so here we are, learning. The first, the 20-somethings is just learning. Now, as I look around, everyone's out of the 20s, but probably a lot of you have 20s. So it's good to know the question they need to answer is, who am I? Who am I? Absolutely critical. Because who am I is essential to why am I? Let me say that again. Who am I is essential to why am I? Because God has put you together in Ephesians 2:10. He says that we are God's, we are created in Christ Jesus to perform good works, which he has in advance prepared for us to do. So in advance, he's given you what you've needed. So we go through a learning phase, and this is a very high activity phase. Broad learning, as you see, hopeful and anxious, searching and verifying. They need to test out their values. They need to test out the things that they've learned from perhaps you, or you learned from your own parents. Phyllis and I are reading through Just As I Am, the biography of Billy Graham. And you can see it as he's growing through. I'm reading with interest because I'm watching the stages. My 27-year-old was, he and his wife and two children were at our home for the holidays. And so we were driving, and he said to me, Dad, if you weren't in Christian ministry, would you buy a different car than you have right now? And I said, well, I probably wouldn't. He says, really? And we launched off into an hour-long conversation about money. Why? He's trying to verify. He's checking things out. Dad, did you really just... I mean, was it... We didn't buy certain things because you were in Christian ministry? Or did you really have some commitments? Or was it guiding you? What was guiding you, Dad? And those are precious moments. They're always trying to verify. They're trying to check, are the values I have the ones that are the right ones? They're longing and they're looking out for somebody who is in the area they are, or perhaps a businessman or a doctor or a teacher or whoever it is, a mother or a father who is living out what they believe is important. 20-year-olds are very idealistic. The things you need for 20-year-olds is have them read biographies. But many of them don't read them today. I was talking to a headhunter who works particularly with 20-somethings. And I asked him, what are some of the questions you ask? And he told me this. One of the questions after the list was, who is your hero? Who is your hero? And I said, that's an interesting question. Why do you ask that? He says, because you tell me about your heroes and I'll tell you what kind of values you have. Because that's why we have certain heroes. They live out the values. Maybe they're not perfect, but some values that are important to us. But I asked him, I said, how many actually have some? He says, it's interesting. 2/3 of them have no response. No heroes. Certainly no heroes of great value. And so we need to work with these 20-year-olds. And they grow and they answer these questions because that builds on. And there's some dangers. Danger about not having mentors in their life. Because they desperately need perspective to answer some of these questions. If you don't have perspective, you can't see things and you're going to make bad decisions. What important decisions are you going to make when you're in your 20s? Marriage, jobs, key things. You know, you can make some very important decisions. You can make about money and you could wind up in some tough situations. They're going to make a lot of decisions and they need perspective. They need sounding boards and they need people who can give them feedback of what they're experiencing, what they're seeing. And so you see some of these things. Key to succeeding, faithfulness, going on. But then you look at the 30-somethings, building. Now we're learning and we're building, and the question we want to answer there is, where is my place? A 30-year-old wants to know where his place is. Where do I belong? Where do I fit? And they're normally looking for professions. Normally professions in the 30s. And that's interesting. And this happens to be also the most pressured period of your life. Those who are close to 30 would say, amen. 30-somethings are under great pressure. Now, why is that? Well, it's because you have marriage, you have some kids, you have a job. And you see, the 30-year-old, now we expect something from 30-year-olds. Before, when you're a 20-year-old, it was like when I first went into the military. A young commissioned officer. And they gave you this brown bar. And that was a second lieutenant. And I almost wanted to walk around like this and kind of hide it. I was embarrassed. You know, brown bar, what it was saying is, I don't know anything. I'm dumb. Please help me. I had an E-8 sergeant, been in there 26 years. And here I was, a young kid, 22 years old, and he salutes me. And probably I always visualize they smirk when they salute at second lieutenant. And so here's this guy walking around with this bolden expression, I know nothing. Everybody help me. And there's a big sign we can put on him, you know, please help me. I need all the help I can get. And they do. And they help you. Unfortunately, only 18 months you last. And then you're on to a silver bar. Well, I thought that's kind of nice. You know, now I'm not so dumb. At least I don't appear to be. And I maybe know a little bit. And so they salute you now. And okay, he's been around a little while. But I remember when I got this, the next level, a captain. And that was 2 silver bars. And then when you're there, you've been at least 4 or 5 years in. And you know something. All of a sudden, I noticed when I got that, people expected something from you. And I kind of felt like, not only did they expect it, but I felt I needed to deliver. And that's exactly what happens in the 30s. Now they expect something from you. You know something. No more dumb, foolish mistakes. Get with it. And you feel that way too. And you want to go hard. And you want to desperately find your place. You want to achieve and make it. You want to find your place of acceptance among those who you respect. So whether it's in the navigators or a business or some profession, they want to make it. They want to arrive. But they're work-driven. They're trying to put life together, get into their first house, earn a living, produce. 30s is a busy, busy time. So you break out of that, and of course those dangers are there. No anchors, life structure, and that life structure is simply beliefs and values and direction, some kind of guidance, some coordinates that you need. And they step into the 40s. Now the 40s is very, very important for us. We heard all about midlife crises and all the rest. Well, there's a reason why, and a genuine reason. It's because in the 40s, you know what happens? The reference point that you've been using all your life up till now has always been your birth. Suddenly the reference point shifts to what? Your death. Not in a morbid sense. But when I went to Vietnam, commanding an infantry company, right in the midst of combat, I never thought I would die. a 20-something, I was 26 years old. 26-year-olds are not thinking about dying, nor are 30-year-olds. It's not a thing you think about. But suddenly you get to your 40s, and you realize it's not all there. And matter of fact, you look ahead and say, I've got less productive years ahead of me than I've got behind me. That's a sobering experience. And so you begin to ask yourself the question, am I in the right place? It's the years, the 40-something are the years of second thoughts. Second thoughts. Because you think more about this and you wonder, am I in the right place? Some even ask, am I married to the right person? That's why you see some of them just gone in their 40s. And so the 40s is very, very important. But it's not until your 40s, I believe, and I've compared with others who've studied lifelines, it's not until your 40s, this question here, why am I here, that you have enough data to answer that question. Oh, sure, in your 20s and 30s, you have goals and desires, and you go out after it. But it's not until your 40s you begin to get in touch with, why am I here? And that's very important for us. Why are we here? What is our purpose? You see, we are the way we are because of why we are. And that's very important for us. Now, I know many 40-year-olds that are looking for this very thing. A good friend of mine, Bob Buford, wrote a book called Halftime. And we went together and formed this little group to help people. And it's amazing that the letters that he gets. He's read some of them to me. All over. And it's that 40 to 55. And people want to make their life significant, if you notice there. We move from success to suddenly you want to have significance in your life. Not just success. Hey, I've had that. I've got the cars. I got all that goes along with success. The recognition, the whatever came with the financial results of that. Success is there, but I want significance. I want to have a life that counts. I want to have life that's meaningful. In Psalm, it was the one Psalm that Moses wrote, Psalm 90, verse 17, he says, may the flavor of the Lord our God rest upon us. Establish the work of our hands for us. Yes, establish the work of our hands. I was talking to a person who studied this in the original and says, what he's really saying there is, make the efforts of a lifetime really count. Now that's where most of us are in this room. We're seeing that the 40-somethings are absolutely crucial, but we've passed by. But it could be that many of us are still looking for that purpose. Still looking for something to really give my life to. Because we once said about us what was said about David in Acts 13:36. And it says, for David fulfilled the purposes of God in his generation and died. Wouldn't that be great? Saying, you fulfill the purposes of God in your generation with the gifts that God gave you, with the capacities that God gave you. All the reasons why you are who you are came together in fulfilling the purposes of God. Now, it's no Shazam. It's no suddenly. It's been building all these years. It's kind of like whacking the ball for a long way and almost out of the park. And you run around first, get to second, go to third, and it isn't that you suddenly turn right. You go back and you look at first base and second base and what got you to third base, and it'll bring you right on in. Because God, in his sovereign way, has been working in you and me. He's even been working in our attitudes and our thinking. So I love the verse Philippians 2:13, which I listed here for you. For it is God who is at work within you, giving you the will and the power to achieve his purpose. So it isn't that you go off into a room and say, I'm going to come up with my purpose. Mm-mm. It's you get in touch with God's purposes. And in light of your gifts and your capacities, you put them into action. Because how you express it and how you join God and his purposes is going to be different than maybe somebody else. But it's going to be unique to you, and it's going to take in all the considerations. So we look at those 40s, and they're crucial times. And we see how it develops, and other people begin to play that role. But then we look at the 55 plus. Now I'll tell you, this is close to nirvana when you get to the 50s. I remember when I got there. I thought, this is going to be terrible. But you know, I got so excited because I could actually say things and people would listen. And one time I was even speaking at a little seminar and I made some comment and it was, and suddenly a younger man says, well, what was that again? So I repeated it. He wrote it down. He says, and who said that? I said, I said that. He says, oh, okay. He put it down. I thought, hey, this is all right being 50. And so now that I'm 56, I just think this is the place to be. I mean, these are all the things that God brought me together for. I am so excited about being in the age that I am. I have opportunity to talk to people. I can speak to young people, 20s and 30s. And now I even call them kids. And they'll respond. They want to listen to you. They want to hear something. And there's something we have learned that we can give back. And that's why the mark of a 55-pluser is one big word, and it's generosity. Generosity. Giving away what all God has given you. Listen, we're going to go into this out of this world naked. We're taking nothing with us. And you need to give all you've got. I'm not just talking about money. That's nothing. What the next generation needs is your experience, your wisdom, the lessons learned. You need to connect yourself. And that's the way God has planned it. And he's developed us that way. And these are the years of convergence. Bringing together all that God has been putting in me, coupled with opportunities coming right in. I was riding on the plane and I had bumped up to first class. And I was sitting with a man who was an Indian originally and came over this country. He'd been here a number of years, had a family. He was in his mid-50s. And we got chatting and different things, expressing. He's from Cleveland. And so I was working on the stages. And he said, what are you working on? So I explained that a little bit and we talked about it. I said, where are you? He says, well, I'm right over here. I said, you got anything going? He says, you know, I really do. I said, tell me about it. Well, he started a company. It's successful. It's booming. And all of a sudden, about 3 or 4 years ago, he says, I got tired of it. I said, you're looking for significance, weren't you? And he says, yeah, I guess so. I said, you find it? He said, why, maybe I did. I said, where? He said, well, my daughter, she went out and became a school teacher. And then she studied remedial reading. And then she found out there's some adults in Cleveland that didn't know how to read. And so she got connected one time and went to this little meeting and found out there was a group. And so she started to help. So one night she comes home and her dad's busy and all the rest. And she said, what you doing, sweetheart? And he said, he told her. She says, well, why don't you come with me, Dad? Oh, I can't do that. He says, just come on down, Dad. He says, well, I don't have any education. No, just come on down. Just help. All you have to do is read and back forth, and I'll show you. He went down. He couldn't believe so many young adults couldn't read. He said, so he came back the next night. He said, for the last 2 years, I've been going down there. I said, you like it? He says, I love it. He says, you know what I'm doing also? I said, what? He says, well, I'm getting things getting organized down there. He says, after all, I didn't, you know, raise up a $60 million company for nothing. I said, I bet you have organization skills, don't you? And he says, yeah. So he says, they weren't operating very well. So he says, I started to get this thing organized. I put it together and we got people. I said, you know, we got to recruit more people like me. I said, oh, I don't know how. He said, well, I know. I've marketed a lot of things. He says, we've got 350 adults coming down there and teaching others to read. I said, 350? That isn't that exciting? I said, what do you feel like when you're driving home after an exhausting evening of working? He says, I feel like this was the reason I came. Now, this guy's not even a Christian. And we got to talk about Christ and what God could do in this. It was interesting. But you know, God has that for us. Now, it may not be this or that, but God is moving us through period of life, and it comes in stages and a lot of commonality to it. But there's some dangers about it. When we get to our stage, we can stop learning. Look at those dangers. We can be security driven. Will we have enough? Or we can buy into the syndrome there that, you know, that it's the easy life I need now. It's the course, it's the golf course, it's whatever. Jim Peterson showed me an article he just got out of Newsweek about all these givers. Maybe you saw it. And the people who give the most are those who earn $50,000 or less. But in there was some phenomenal little stories. And I've been collecting these stories about people who suddenly, a teacher, she's never had much money at all. But she started to put a little bit of money away to try to help people. She taught art and to awaken people to the arts. And she's got a little foundation. And she's got the foundation is only $85,000, but it's all hers. And she gives it away and helps and she gets involved and she loves it. My graduation, quarterly, we get an alumni magazine. And every class has its section. And they tell about what people have done. And all of a sudden, I notice in the class before me, I was class of 63 and class of 62, one guy is a top lawyer in San Francisco. All of a sudden, he's sitting in his big office. He was the managing partner and looking out. And he decides, there's got to be more than this. And so he left it all. He's operating his house. And he's helping people who can't afford lawyers. And then there's this other guy who was an investments broker, had all kinds of success. And he says, and Joe Smith, I forget his name, but Joe Smith is heading for Alaska, where he's been teaching now for a year, teaching high school kids. And it says, and in the bottom there's a quote. He says, life couldn't be better. I love it up here. What is it? What is it that God's called you to be? The purpose that God has for you. It's exciting, and I think we're in that place. We have the privilege, those of us who are here, to make choices. And choices are more important as we go along. Over in the 20s, okay, you can kind of recover some from choices. 30s, you know, they're important, very important in certain areas. But the more we get on in the 40s, 50s, 60s, some of your choices, there may not be a way to come back online. Because you may put yourself almost in a place you're out of touch. And of course, crucial to all this, as I put down here under key to succeeding, is responding, is inner life growth and ministry, giving your life away. When you're constantly involved, those are the mainstays. Because if we're not in touch with God, we won't find that purpose. Well, tomorrow Jim's going to take us into looking at some of this and where we can start. So that's stages of life.